Amish to the Buddha, Amish to the Dharma, Amish to the Sangha. I'm continuing on in my series of talks on how to grow lotus blossom, and we're very close to the end of the period of a little less than a year during which our master was having this great Kensho. I'm on page 161 now. The chapter of this very short, or the name of this very short chapter is Heaven and Earth Are One. Her master says, "It is the morning of the 22nd of January. I am again in the Buddha land. Yesterday evening I was there for a brief moment, and it was as if the sea were about to engulf it. It had already almost reached the little house which enclosed the fountain when I realized that the only person who could stop it was me. I grasped my will with all my might and commanded it to recede, and it did so just a little." I want to talk a little bit about the circumstances at the time. I could be wrong, but I believe that this is around the time that Rimaster started to get word back from England that one of the disciples who had left due to his doubts about what was happening with her training and at the Abbey at the time had gone back to England and had spread his doubts, causing a number of people who themselves had no direct contact with what was happening at the time at the Abbey with their master, caused them to doubt, and they renounced Reverend Master as their teacher. At least three of these people actually received her transmission, so it was a particularly serious matter. I don't believe it's reaching too far in my interpretation of this to say that this was another time when Reverend Master was really probably considering, as in fact the Buddha did right after his enlightenment, you may remember, whether it was even possible for people to really hear this teaching at this depth and take it in and make use of it, whether it might even be doing more harm than good. It's said that the Buddha spent a month after his enlightenment pondering this question and then decided to make the offering with no guarantee whether anyone would get the point or not. I suspect that something like this was going through Reverend Master's mind at the time. I think that the sea rising to engulf the temple on the hill and the fountain was really a warning sign to Reverend Master that unless you choose to go on and to make this offering, unless you accept the responsibility that comes with this magnificent experience and this magnificent understanding, unless you accept the responsibility with all of its difficulties and with the inevitable reaction that some people are going to have to it when they hear about it, then at least for those of us at Shasta, for those of us who so look to her, and no one more than myself at the time, I have to say, as I've said many times, the temple and on the hill and the fountain would disappear. She says, "I grasped my will with all my might and commanded it to recede, and it did so just a little." another clue to the meaning of this was I actually take from Master Mokushin, who made a comment recently that she said that the sea of lotuses, the waveless sea, is also the sea of samsara, the sea of sorrow. It's up to us how we will see it, how we will perceive it, how we will live within it. And if we give up because of the discouragement of the world, because of the way in which the world sometimes discourages us or attempts to do so, if we give up because of the drag that others may sometimes put upon our going forward in our following of the eternal, then we turn that waveless sea back into the sea of sorrow. Her master goes on to say, "Now this morning as I meditate, I watch it recede further and further, leaving more and more of the shore exposed until there's absolutely no water left and the seabed is exposed. The lotus blossoms withdraw their stems as the water level sinks, drawing them deeper and deeper into the earth until the blossoms rest on the newly revealed ground. The beings in them," remember there's a being in each of the lotuses, "the beings in them step off onto the earth and mingle with the people of the world, appearing as ordinary beings, whether human or animal. The fountain which had seemed almost to dry up last night," the fountain had almost dried up, a sign that despair is starting to win out. "But she grasped her will and turned the wheel in the opposite direction, in the direction of the following of the eternal, of true willingness. And now it flows freely again, and heaven and earth are one." That waveless sea is the sea, is the ocean of eternal, infinite love. And in this instance, when it recedes, or when it seems to recede, because of course this is a matter just of appearance, it always is. But it puts the heavenly beings in with the ordinary human beings and mixes them all together. And this mixing, what is called the mixing and the melding in the teachings on harmonization with the eternal, this mixing and melding is always, always an aspect of meditation. I've spoken it throughout this series of talks often as the help of the eternal meeting the need. And in the mixing and melding, in deep within the hara, in meditation, within what is called the jade palace or the shadowy hall, there's so many different ways of expressing that immense stillness of meditation, that immense openness of heart of meditation. Within that context, the help of the eternal meets the need of our karmic inheritance, all the need, and they mix and mingle together so that the love and the wisdom of the eternal can saturate every aspect of need and transform it until it also becomes an aspect of help in its fully converted form, manifesting as merit, to be used by the eternal as is good and with our assistance as we are called to assist by the eternal. The sea recedes in appearance here so that the oneness of help and need can be revealed, and so that their eternal dance, their eternal intermingling the mixing and melding can be shown in all of its magnificence and in all of its ordinariness. To look upon the entire stream of karma with enlightened eyes is to see not a single speck of dust. To see with the eyes of a Buddha is to see the heart of a Buddha everywhere, in everything, even in the darkest hell, even in the demon who threatens and tortures. To know at all times within one's own heart the goodness of heart of every being, even while one does not go along with delusion, even while one says no to it. Because after all, putting our coal on the burning pile of coals does not stop the pile burning. Reverend Matthew used to say, if the drunk comes to the gate of the temple, you bow to him, tell him to come back when he's sober. You don't join in with him or encourage his drunkenness, and you also don't judge it. You meditate apart until such time as sobriety has set in. Then, if there is sincere asking, you let him in. She goes on to say, herein lies another use of the five columns of light, the five aspects of meditation, the five aspects of the life given to the eternal. It is by means of the first column that I may know the Buddha land. This is because even in the greatest darkness, if we look up in faith, and if our heart cries out to the eternal, there is then that little place of light within the darkness. It was always there, and our eyes are opened to it. And that is always the root of knowledge of the Buddha land. She says, by means of the second of the columns, I become fit to enter it. This is because this is the place of Sangha. This is the place in which we take our spiritual need and we open our own heart to it and we present it to the eternal in faith for the eternal to help us with it. For the eternal to do the work of cleansing and conversion. She says, by means of the third column, I may know that the whole universe is the Buddha land. This is because this is the place, the spiritual place, in which we know the help of the eternal reaching the need, in which the teaching is given, and we take the teaching, and the teaching addresses the precise nature of the need, whatever that is. By means of the fourth column, I am given the love and strength to combine them all in the fifth. By means of the fourth column, which is the saturating love and wisdom of the eternal, the help now converted itself in, or the need now converted itself into help and scattering into the world as merit, showering down upon the rest of the need that is itself looking for help and extending outwards into the world. And within that shower of compassion and wisdom, we find the strength and the resolve to continue to find the Buddha land within even the darkest place that we may come to. For me personally, I'm awfully glad River Master kept going forward at this time, that she chose to continue to find the Buddha land in this very difficult situation that she lived in every day, of a bunch of young and often very confused disciples sincerely trying to get it and so often missing the mark. Because my own first Kensho was only 2.5 weeks from this date. And Red Master was there with me when it happened. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.